Hey team, welcome to the Professionally Offensive Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Cabrera. This is the spot where we provide raw, unfiltered insights from some amazing guests. Stand by, you're about to be offended in all the right ways. But before we get into knives, I want to just kind of dig into how does a guy who starts in investment banking, and then decides at some point, and not just like a few years. I mean, it sounds, I knew this was like a big chunk of your kind of initial career in your life. Then you, how does a guy go from that world to something that I could not imagine be the furthest from it?
Well, you and every other person around me thought the exact same thing. I got the, have you lost your mind? What is going on here? So knife making was never far from my world, even when I was putting on a suit and tie every day and going into the corporate world. It was my release from corporate America, if you will, on the weekends or any free time I had. I found myself in my shop making knives or trying to get better at it, per se. And, I tell people all the time, I think I was educated to be a finance guy, right? I was trained to be a finance guy. Now it took some training to learn the craft of knife making, but I think I really and truly feel like it's in my DNA. It's in my heart. And, I tell my team all the time, it's much easier to do stuff you're passionate about than stuff you're not passionate about. Right. I came out of the time in the investment world where it was wild. It was the mid to late 90s, and that period of time, I'm sure it was you could close your eyes and throw a dart at the board, and that was the next best thing out there. And so I learned a lot. The path I took, while not traditional path into the knife making world, I really needed that background to kind of propel me to where I'm at personally from a mental standpoint to think that, hey, yes, I can go and run a business. Right. It was something. It wasn't that I just woke up one day and said, hey, I'm going to go be a knife maker. It had always been a part of my life. It wasn't my profession, but it was a part of my life. And then, there was just a period of time where, and this is not a slight to any of my former employers who may listen to this, et cetera. I love all you guys. Loved all the organizations that I worked for, but I didn't love getting up and going and doing it every day anymore. And, at the same time, my grandfather's who taught me the craft, I had watched a man who ran a Citgo service station for 60 plus years, and the hardest job, that I had ever seen. Right. That was back in the day of full service, et cetera, in a tiny little town. Everybody came there, but he loved doing it. Gosh, he loved doing it. He loved the people. He loved the sense of helping people. Right. Or solving problems. I was in my professional career and was successful, had kind of wound back down with two guys that I initially started in the business with. And we had a small private wealth management company that we had started. And, it was great. It was fun. We were both successful business-wise, but also in the engagement with our clientele that we had. I mean, we had great relationships with these folks, but there was just something in my heart that was not in it. And you hear people talk about getting the Sunday blues. I mean, I found myself thinking, gosh, I don't want to go. I would rather go out to my knife shop tomorrow. I really would. And it's total insanity because the knife shop can't put bread on the table, but this is what I want to do. And plugging along in the corporate world, doing that, started noticing people would ask me hey, can you make me this? Can you do this? I would love to see that. And I'll never forget. And and this is a funny story don't want to spend too much time on it, but the very first night, I had a gentleman that taught me how to shrimp, running poles with, you know, bait in shallow water, running the poles, throwing the cast net, going up and down. And the art of that, I'd shrimped with him for years, an older gentleman. He bought the very first knife I ever sold to somebody. He bought a fillet knife from me that I made. He bought it for $20. I've been trying to buy that fillet knife back from him now for a decade, and he won't sell it to me.
He still has
it. he still has it. And he's promised me that in his will that it will go to my oldest son. And but I give him so much grief because I want it back. But you know, there came a point in time where I literally was sitting in my office and kind of thinking about my life and, you know, what is my purpose, right? And you know, I'm a spiritual person, and it's I just didn't feel like I was where I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you get to that point, you know, there was a lot of luck involved to get me to where we are today, right? Hands down. But, and I'm not saying everybody can just go jump off and do that. But I think when you get to the point where your heart's not in it, especially in the, when you're dealing with people's, you know, livelihoods, their finances, et cetera, I think you have to really take a hard look at yourself and say, am I a benefit or a detriment? Right. And so I was sitting at my desk and I said, you know what? I'm going to go try this. I'm going to go see. And worst case scenario, I can dust my resume off, put my suit back on and come back with hat in hand and see if I can get back into the corporate world. And, you know, again, going back, a lot of luck, a lot of people that supported me. A lot of people thought I was insane, no question about that. But a lot of things kind of fell in place that helped me. And all of a sudden, I had a little company that was starting to run, and I had some orders here. And I can remember those early days of hopping in the truck with a box, you know, like a big Tupperware from one of the big box stores, you know, with foam in it, with my knives that I'd made, and running here and there to these retailers to see if they would just give me a shot, you know. And I had a lot of no's. I had a lot of like, I don't think so, you know. But I finally got a yes. I finally got a yes at a store that I did a lot of my shopping in. It was Charleston Angler. I hope you don't mind me plugging them on the air. They're great. Great local business in Charleston.
They're still around as well?
Still around as well, yes, absolutely. Awesome. And got a couple locations in Charleston. The go-to spot for anything fishing and, you know, really outdoor lifestyle related down in the Charleston area. And a gentleman gave me a shot. He said, you know, we'll take X, you know. And so I remember walking out of there and thinking, like, this is crazy. You know, this is crazy. I've just actually taken an order for my products. And I was thinking, gosh, you know, this would be cool. I'll come down here and keep checking on them and making sure they're doing all right. And you know, hopefully by next year can get them some more. Well, by next week, they were calling me needing more.
Really?
And yeah. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And through that same group, they asked me to come out and do an event, Southeastern Wildlife Expo in Charleston, come out and set up in their big tent space with them for the weekend. And I did. And while I was out there, I met some folks from the Garden and Gun magazine, had stopped by and saw my work, and really cool guys were very interested in what I was doing, kind of my background. You know, I told them, hey, you know, my background, and they too looked at me like I was insane. And you know, there was this movement in Charleston that had started, and it was going back to people that were making things, right? And I don't think it was just Charleston specific. I think it was nationwide. But there was just this starting to be this movement of people, craftsmen, coming back and making stuff, right? Making stuff in the U.S. and making stuff with their hands, et cetera. And And Garden and Gun had this little deal where they did a thing called Made in the South Awards, and very neat concept. And they had at that time two or three categories, I think. You know, one was kind of outdoor related, one was kind of foodish related, and maybe one was home kind of stuff. And the first year, a gentleman won it that made these beautiful handmade guitars. And I'm a musician. I love guitars. I mean, it's like I wish I could build a guitar. I think they're the most magical creations on the planet. But he made these beautiful acoustic guitars. He was out of Virginia. And I just remember reading that article and reading about him. And he had a very similar kind of epiphany, per se. He was in the business world and was making guitars and on the side, and it kind of left that security blanket and went out on his own. The next thing you know, he was making guitars for some of the biggest artists in the country, and but making these beautiful pieces of art. And so, you know, the next year comes rolling around, and I run into some of the folks with Garden and Gun, and at this point in time, I had come up with the Oyster Knife, the Stowe Oyster Knife, and being, you know, in Charleston in a big oyster community, right? You know, some of them said, "Gosh, you know, you ought to enter your Oyster Knife," and I can remember looking at one of the guys that said that to me, and my exact words to him were, "I saw the gentleman who won last year with the guitar, and I'm telling you right now, my work is chicken scratch compared to that." Those were my exact words. I can remember the exact spot I was standing when I told him that. And so, you know, time drags on a little bit. The entry deadline's coming up, and you know, one night it was literally, I think, the deadline night at the last moment. I said, you know what, I'm gonna do it. And so I entered my product in, and lo and behold, you know, not only does it win the outdoor sporting category, but it wins the overall Made in the South Award. And it just instantaneously overnight changed my life, Joseph. I mean, literally changed my life.
It's incredible to think about, like, how vivid that memory is to you, right? I mean, like, everything you're saying, you almost transported me back exactly to that moment. I mean, when people say, when was the turning point, you know exactly when that was.
The exact point. I mean, I can remember, you know, they keep it very secretive, the selection process, et cetera. And but at some point in time, they have to kind of let some people in, because they need to produce content for the magazine, et cetera. And so you get this call, and hey, you're being considered for, you know, one of our 30 finalists or whatever, and can we come shoot you and at your shop, et cetera. And at this point in time, I'm still operating in a literally like a little 10 by 10 spot off of my carport. It's funny, and I don't want to get too off subject, but people in all of my shops, people always wonder why a lot of my machines have casters on them, big rolling casters on the machines that typically you would, you know, weld or not weld, but secure to the floor, et cetera. And I say, because when I started, I had to literally push all my machines back into this 10 by 10 room every night. And it was like a jigsaw puzzle. Everything, I couldn't get anything new because it wouldn't fit, you know? And so, but I was literally still doing that. They came and they shot me. And, you know, I kind of told my story to one of the gentlemen that came, and he took, you know, notes, et cetera. And, so one of those times you talk about when you can specifically remember, and I get a call from Garden and Gun, and I'm on my way down to meet some buddies for a little weekend of outdoors south of Atlanta at a gentleman's farm down there. And they called me and they said, you know, we want to talk to you a little bit about Made in the South. And where are you? And I said, I am in downtown Atlanta in bumper to bumper traffic. I'm looking at the Varsity sign right here. They know that area, so they know exactly where I'm at, right there at Georgia Tech, right smack dab on 85 in the middle of 5 o'clock traffic. They said, well, you know, you might want to pull over. We've got a little talking to do. And so I navigate my way over to an exit and get off and pull off. And they say, you know, congratulations. You know, not only have you won the thing, but you've won our overall. And we're going to give you 2.5 seconds to celebrate. And then we're going to need to talk logistics, because we're going to send a newsletter out tomorrow And we need to know who hosts your website, what the capabilities of it are, et cetera, because we will crash it. We will crash it, literally. And, you know, I'm thinking, here I am on my way down for this peaceful getaway weekend of fellowship with my buddies. And I get
just
this
got
call
your
and
world
it's
rocked.
And just world rotted. And I had a friend that was very kind. And we traded knives for website help, you know, at the time. And I didn't have any of those answers. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know who hosted my website. I didn't know our capabilities, et cetera. So I'm scrambling to call and find all this out. And long story short, they sent out an email that morning at 10 o'clock the next day. And within an hour, I had, you know, several hundred orders for an oyster knife, completely crashed my website. The magazine comes out. We got it back going, but over the weekend, I went from a guy in a 10 by 10 shop to a guy that had a significant, production issue on my hands, thinking, how in the world am I ever going to fill all these orders? I was extremely humbled, extremely grateful for not only the recognition, but for every customer that pushed the buy button, right? I couldn't believe it. I was blown away. Like the very first order I took from a gentleman, or the very first one that came in from somebody I didn't know, right, was a gentleman out of Florida. I still keep up with him today. He's one of my best friends, a great mentor, great businessman. Got the email and immediately bought one, and we've had millions of conversations about the evolution of this of my business. But so it just changed my life overnight, right? And so I spent instead of being a field that weekend, I spent the remainder of the weekend brainstorming with some of my buddies who were a couple of them were in the investment field with me, and a couple of them were business owners, and talking about how in the world am I going to do this? Like, what am I going to do? You know?
Keep up with
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, man, like as you're talking about, like, how did you, the thing that's tinkering in my brain right now is like when you go from this very successful financial career into this world you just described, but even backing up in the early where you're like got this box of knives and you're going from door to door, how did you stay humble the whole way through? There's a lot of people that have a hard time going from working at a big company with benefits and prestige and that, you know, that polish, and then going into being this guy's like, look, I just literally need to drive my pickup truck door to door and figure out who will say yes to me. How did you stay humble during that whole process?
Gosh, you know, well, first and foremost, out of necessity, really and truly. But I think, and I don't want this to come across as any braggadocious or anything, but I think there was this aura that probably was felt about me because I was so at peace with what I was doing. I was finally doing something that I was passionate about, extremely passionate about. And anybody that would give me 2 minutes of their time to talk about it, I think they could quickly see how passionate about it I was. And I remembered, you know, my dad told me, you know, one time, this was when I was still in the financial business. He said, you know, you gotta keep a balance between your current customer base and your opportunities you're seeking, right? Because your customers are your customers, right? They're the guys who are with you. These other folks are not your customers yet. You've got to go out there and procure, but you can't lose sight of that, right? And so. So I took that and kind of flipped it around and thought about these people that I was approaching with my product, right, and trying to tell my story and promising them, you know, look, anything you need from me. I mean, I can remember going in to some and they would talk about pricing and I would literally sit there and say, hey, tell me what will make it work for you. I just want a shot, you know. Tell me what it would make for you. Probably not the best business model, but
yeah.
I built relationships, you know, that way. And so through that process of going through, I mean, you know, I had already been beaten up enough by my community of friends and family for making this wild decision to jump off and do this. So all the pride had been beaten out of me. at this point in time. But I was very, I took great pride in what I was doing. And I think that that resonated out of me. I can remember my mother telling me, you know, she was probably the one that lost the most sleep over it when I took the jump. But I can remember her, you know, finally looking at me and saying, gosh, I'm looking at my son doing what he's supposed to be doing. And I think that resonated when I was out with people and I was having fun, you know, I was having fun. It was stressful. It was hard. It was a change. It was a dramatic pay cut, et cetera. But I was having fun.
Thanks for tuning in. We want to hear from you. So do me a solid, leave us a review. We read every comment. If you got value from what you heard today, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, share it with a friend. Thanks for being on the team. We'll see you on the high ground. JC out.